Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to NaNoWriMo Every Month. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 24 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and other things, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, Episode 167. Today, Joseph asks, I just listened to Questions 152, The Nature of Epics, and even if the person who asked the question doesn't request a follow-up, I would like to do so myself. I was very excited to see the show topic pop up. That being said, you did a fantastic job defining what epics are, but I would like to know more about the processes and practical nuts and bolts of creating each variety. In particular, I'm interested in what you call granularity and epic scope in terms of writing that is not necessarily fantasy. Your comment brings to mind books like Haldor Laxness's Independent People, often considered epic, in which most of the drama centers simply enough around whether or not a cow should be killed for food and not some grand quest. The whole topic strongly resonated with me, and if you have more to say on the subject of non-fantasy epics and granularity, I would be fascinated to hear it. And then he goes on to say some wonderfully complimentary things about the podcast, and thank you, Joseph. It's always nice to know that what I'm doing is valuable and useful to some of you out there, and entertaining to the rest of you. Okay. Granularity. As I've hit this topic a few different times, let me see what I can come up with here. Granularity, for lack of a better term, it's my term for the size of the details you focus on. In terms of the time flow of your story, the granularity could be minute by minute, hour by hour, week by week. In any story, it will compress and expand to serve the needs of the story. You could have half the story take place in a single evening, and then you'd very rapidly, in the course of a page, go past 4 or 5 weeks until the follow-up necessary conclusion happens. This happened in a movie I rewatched recently, Alfred Hitchcock's Dial M for Murder, where the first half of the film happens over the course of 2 evenings, and then there is a little 1.5-minute telescoping scene that covers months and months, and then the final half of the film happens just about in real time over the course of a half an hour or 45 minutes on one afternoon. The way time maps into your story is the granularity. And the more microscopically focused the granularity is, in terms of the bulk of your story, the more intimate the story will feel. The more grand the granularity is, the more you move through spaces, sweeping time, broad concerns, bigness. The more you bring bigness into the story, you know, from the perspective of your narrator and the perspective that your reader is experiencing, that brings the sort of epic scope of granularity into the story. That's that big feel. Lawrence of Arabia, shot in super 70mm film. If you can ever watch it in the original wide, wide, wide screen, which I think all of the Blu-rays and DVDs out now feature it in, what you see on the screen is the visual embodiment of the epic, even to the point where there's a scene where T.E. Lawrence is lighting a cigarette and he strikes a match and holds it out at arm's length at the far, far left end of frame, while he's fixing the cigarette into his mouth on the far right end of frame, and then brings the match in to light it. That distance between even the smallest things in the frame is what gives that movie its gigantic sense of space. If you shot that same film in a square aspect ratio, looking at the same images, the same landscapes, no matter how big they are, having that square aspect ratio, or squarer aspect ratio, would give you a sense of closeness and intimacy. This is why Stanley Kubrick, for example, tended to fit his films in a box rather than on a widescreen, because that forced the viewers into a more intimate frame of mind. And whether he was telling epic stories or not, he always wanted access to the intimate part of the viewer's brain. And just a quick reminder for those of you who hadn't heard, this episode is in fact brought to you by the good people at BundleRabbit.com, Earth's most accessible book bundling marketplace and distribution site. The epic story evokes a sense of distance in the reader, not unpleasant distance or a distance that keeps someone out of the story, but a sense in the reader's mind of the reader having sort of a god's eye view of what's going on. It's an ongoing awareness, regardless of where the focus of the moment in the story is, the reader has an ongoing awareness of how big things are. And you want to cultivate that sense of how big things are as you're going through, if you want to create that epic feel, whether you're telling a proper epic or not. So the best non-fantasy epics I've ever read in terms of achieving the feel come from the family saga genre. Roots, Pillars of the Earth, World Without End, I, Claudius, and Claudius the God. Pillars of the Earth and World Without End, by the way, are by Ken Follett. Roots is by Alex Haley. I, Claudius, and Claudius the God are by Robert Graves. Aztec by Gary Jennings. All of these are big books. They feel big and epic. The soap opera Revenge, which just finished running on ABC last year, is an epic soap opera, even though its events are confined almost exclusively to a small island, and at their biggest, they will occasionally flash out to Japan for a brief scene in a flashback, or they'll move into New York City, which is on a nearby small island. It's all very contained, and yet it has this grand, huge epic scope because the events taking place in front of the camera affect national elections and international politics, and there's lots of moving parts and everybody has a different agenda. Soap operas are basically family sagas with the sort of melodrama and cheese factor turned up to 11. But if you're wanting to understand how to create an epic scope in an intimate setting, that's the form you really want to study, is the soap opera. Even if you hate it, trust me, you can learn a lot. And I hate soap operas, and I was bloody hooked by Revenge from minute one all the way through the end of the last episode. The pace also has something to do with it. An epic has a sort of leisurely pace. It's not that nothing's happening. It's not even that things are dragging. It's that the rate at which everything is moving gives you room to breathe, to take in the scenery without ever losing your engagement. Something like 24, television series 24, is a high adrenaline thriller. Speed, the original Speed with Keanu Reeves, is a great one on the screen. Very self-contained, very linear. The tension never lets up. And there's usually just one kind of tension, maybe two, going all the way through. A similar film that came out a couple of years later was The Usual Suspects. And The Usual Suspects has an epic feel. Both films are very tightly plotted crime stories. They take place over a tightly controlled amount of time. In both cases, they take place over a day. In The Usual Suspects, it's all flashbacks told through an interrogation, aside from the opening scene, which happens the previous night. And in Speed, the bulk of it happens during the day, except for the opening scene, which happens a few weeks earlier. However, their approaches to things, the granularity is one of them, the tightness of the succession of events is another, the sense of breathing space is another. Speed squeezes all the air out of the mix and makes it one solid wall of adrenaline, front to back, including the way they design the opening titles. And it's brilliantly done. Joss Whedon's best script, come to think of it. The Usual Suspects, again, tells you everything you need to know about the feel of the film in those opening credits. It's just a very long, slow, dolly shot over dark water with a piano line that is beautiful and very disturbing. And there's something about that opening that communicates to you that what you're in for is a dark, twisty crime story with a grandiose feel. An epic feeling. And The Usual Suspects has an epic feeling. It only comes down to that high adrenaline squeeze at the final, final moments of the film. And that's where it squeezes down and pays everything off. it has many kinds of tension running through the whole story. There's some mystery threads, there's competing agendas, there's people manipulating other people, there's all sorts of interpersonal drama going on, as well as the main through-line mystery, the crime story thread. Watching those two films, they're both short films, they're both about 90 minutes. They were produced around the same time, and basically for the same audience, the R-rated action movie audience. Watch those two together and you will see the difference between a tightly granular thriller and a beautifully done epic with breathing space, and yet both are very tense and both are very gorgeous. Hopefully that will help you kind of get your head around this elusive thing that I'm not explaining very well. It's an emotional gestalt that you're looking to build, and there's all sorts of little tools that you use in building the emotional gestalt. But the gestalt itself is what makes for the feeling of the epic story. What you want is that sense of a big world with far-reaching consequences and lots at stake, whether the focus of the narrative is very, very small or very, very large. You want the sense that there is this vast context around what's going on that is bigger than you'll ever see completely as a reader. In more intimate stories, what you want is the opposite. You want the sense that everything you need to know, everything that's possibly at stake, is right there on the page in front of you. It's usually nakedly personal. It usually comes down to a mano-a-mano type of confrontation. And even when it doesn't, it has to do with one character against another character directly without a lot of complicating factors, even if it takes complication to get to that. With the intimate story, that conflict is the story. With an epic story, that conflict is the nexus of a world full of larger forces that are moving around that main conflict. That's the difference between an epic story and an intimate story. I hope that helps. Thank you very much for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow.
NaNoWriMo Every Month is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at NaNoWriMoEveryMonth.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. NaNoWriMo Every Month is copyright 2016 by J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions and is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivatives License.